Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Roger J. Lederer, Professor Emeritus of Biological Sciences at California State University, Chico, where he taught courses on ornithology and ecology. And we're talking about his beautiful new book, The Art of the Bird, The History of Ornithological Art Through 40 Artists. Roger, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you about this beautiful book.
Oh, good. Nice to talk to you as well.
How did you choose the 40 artists that you chose for this book?
Well, it was a bit of a chore going through, realize how many artists there were. And a lot of it had to do with how much information there was in the artists. There were some artists I found that I found almost no information on. And then there were some I found all kinds of information on. I sort of sorted through that. And also, the editor wanted a representation around the world rather than just, you know, United States or England. So, but even then, I'm sort of stuck because there's not too many, there's no artists from Asia, for instance. They're mostly European and American and English colonies, former English colonies artists.
Yeah, and also we should mention, although your book starts in the sort of the Flemish-Dutch period, there was bird art before, but we didn't know who the artists were.
Right.
So people have been painting and drawing and putting on cave walls art about birds since the very beginning of art, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, for a long time. I mean, they've been bird artists since who knows when. I mean, I remember seeing pictures of hieroglyphics with birds in them. Some of the characters are birds, and cave drawings and all sorts of stuff. Of course, yeah, we don't know who they are.
So you needed art where you absolutely needed, you knew the name of the artist.
Yes.
Now, when I followed your book through, it seems that there were several threads throughout the book. One is changes in painting, printing techniques, and even photography affects the kind of art that artists do. With the coming of lithography and all sorts of other more sophisticated kinds of printing techniques, bird art really takes off, especially for in prints and for the public. Is that true?
Right. Right. I mean, it was, you know, early on it was just painting. And it's quite tedious to be. I've tried painting. I can't do it at all. I've taken a couple of courses, I mean, a couple of days, and I said, oh, this is not for me. So I really admire some of these old paintings from the 15, 1600s.
Oh, yeah.
But then as they started to reproduce it, you know, apparently lithography made things considerably easier, although to me that sounds even harder. And, of course, photographer makes it a lot easier as well. But even good bird photography is hard to do.
Oh, it's tremendously hard to do. My wife is a bird photographer, and you can ask her. It's incredibly hard, unless you have the bird in the cage.
Yeah, I mean, everything is backlit, and the bird comes out with a little black spot.
Also, one of the things that seems to affect the artwork is the mechanics of observation, as binoculars, as telescopes, as different kinds of things that allow you to look at birds better. The bird art seems to get more detailed too.
Right, exactly. I mean, some of the new bird art is just incredible how detailed it is. A woman named Butterworth, I think she's still alive now. Yeah, painted some incredible stuff. You know, and I'm sure it just takes maybe a microscope or something to paint the detail she has.
Well, what I've noticed, I have friends who do art now, is they'll go out into the field with binoculars, like on a tripod, and actually watch the birds for a long period of time, sketching in the field while they do it, but with the aid of a telescope or binoculars, and that makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, there was a couple of bird artists who used to go out and just, they'd sketch everything. I mean, they just spent hours and hours and hours. Looking, Eric Ennion is one. He used to be a doctor and then became a bird artist, and he just spent all his time out in the field, and if he didn't have his notebook with him, he'd sketch on a napkin.
There's also advances in science and taxonomy that happened throughout this time period covered in your book, and that changes everything, because once people start thinking about birds as individual species, then more detail starts to get put into the art, and actually then you start getting things like field guides.
Right. I mean, natural history really didn't start until almost the 1800s. People were looking at birds, but it was all about taxonomy. It was just about naming birds, and they didn't care where they came from. I thought it was pretty interesting that they would get these birds from trips that explorers would take. 1500s, 1600s, bring birds back from South America and Africa, and then they'd paint them all together, they'd put them in a book and classify them all together because they sort of looked alike. They had no clue where the birds came from. And then some artists started looking at birds out in the field and wondering, oh, what they're doing. Well, this one looks like this, and looks like this, and acts like this, and acts like this. Start putting all the things together and say, well, these can't be related, or they are related. So science came along with that. And of course, the bird artist had to reflect all this. So the art and ornithology really worked together for many years.
Let's talk about a couple of the artists in your book. And some of them are my favorite bird artists. And I want to mention what I want to thank you for. You introduced me to some bird artists I didn't know. And that was really interesting that I wasn't familiar with these artists. But one artist I'm really familiar with, and this is from your Flemish and Baroque artists from 1580 to 1700, Franz Snijders. What do you want to say about his genres of painting? He has a genre of painting he's really famous for that I think a lot of people could be repulsed by.
Yeah, Franz Snijder, well, those early paintings were all about birds, you know, in cages, or birds, especially on a dinner table. They would spread out all kinds of birds, and they ate them all, although some were preferred over others, and some were put in just like the kingfisher, which is really bright colored. They put on the table, but people really didn't like to eat them, but they'd put them on the table because it made a better composition for the painting. And the swan too. Swans, although they ate swans they put in the picture because it's a big bird and it can be a centerpiece. It's nice and white and so on.
But when you look at Franz Snijder's paintings, and it's just a big table of dead stuff. It's a genre that's not really popular today.
No, I don't think people would get away with it today.
But you look at the collection of stuff. You have a reproduction of a market scene in your book, and there is one of those huge, humongous swans that Snijder is famous for. It's a mute swan, lying dead. But there's all these other weird animals. There's all fish. There's cats running around. It's really chaotic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at the time, when I always have a hard time imagining this, but at the time in 1500s, 1600s, these were a time where people owned big estates, and they'd have, you know, thousands of acres, and they'd have a big castle or some estate in the middle of all this property. And they'd hire people just to shoot wildlife, not for food necessarily, just to kill it off. And I'm imagining that, boy, there's all kinds of foxes and raccoons and birds and everything that are just annoying because there's so many of them. And today we don't have very many scenes like that. And so they would shoot everything, and a lot of it would go to market.
Now, you also have a wonderful painting, which I hadn't seen before, by Franz Snijder. It's called The Concert of Birds. Talk to me about what that looks like.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That's a wild painting.
Yeah, The Concert of Birds. Apparently that's been a theme for, I can't remember offhand now, but it was based on some musical piece. But a number of people have used that as a theme. And there's this owl apparently directing all these birds in their various songs.
And they're swarming all over the owl.
Right.
It's like they're mobbing the owl.
They're mobbing the owl, like maybe he's not directing them right or something like that. Not sure, but, you know, birds do mob owls a lot just because the owl's a predator, just like they mob hawks. You see a number of pictures like that where the hawk is being picked on by a bunch of other birds.
Well, one of the things they used to do at the time, and I've seen paintings of this, is they used to take a live owl and tether it to a pole and put it in a field. All the other birds would come out to mob it, and then they would shoot all those other birds.
Right.
And so this sort of came out of that. But there's such a strange cacophony of birds in that painting. It's amazing. Now, you mentioned before, parrots show up in a lot of paintings in the Baroque period, in the Flemish and Baroque artists. And there are no native parrots to Europe. So these are all parrots that are just being brought home by explorers?
Right, yeah, parrots were a big deal. I think partly, I didn't run across this, but I suspect that reason the parrots got to Europe is because they're easy to travel with. There's lots of other birds, a lot of little small birds that never made it to Europe just because they didn't know how to feed them. They're be on these ships for 3 months at a time, and unless you know how to take care of birds, just little birds aren't going to make it. So the birds that are making it are pheasants and quail and peacocks and things like that, and parrots. Parrots are fairly easy to domesticate, so they make it over. Plus, they're really pretty.
They are.
So everybody was using parrots, and a lot of the big estates would have zoos of parrots, and so the early paintings were parrots and pheasants and peacocks and those ground-dwelling birds that were just easy to keep. That was really the main reason.
Now, moving on up in your book, and again, your book proceeds chronologically, and finally we get to the natural history of birds, and that's in about 1680 to 1806. People are now writing books about the natural history of birds, and I want to talk about probably the first American natural history book about birds. It was illustrated and written by Mark Catesby. Who was he?
Right. Yeah, I frankly have to admit, I don't know how to pronounce his name.
It's Catesby.
Catesby.
Yeah, Catesby.
Catesby it is. Okay, that makes more sense. Yeah, he was the one that really, I think, kicked it off because he really made an effort. There were a lot of mistakes in his drawings, but they were much better than the earlier stuff. He really paid attention to where birds went, where they came from, how they changed over the seasons, how they compared to one another, and over in Europe and in the U.S. And I think he started kick the whole thing off.
He was French, but then did this natural history of the Carolinas, Florida, and the Bahama Islands in 1726.
Right.
You mentioned him talking about he presented papers on migration, bird migration in Britain. He observed migrating bobolinks over the seas when he was on a ship and was one of the first people to observe migration in the United States. But he also depicted plants with his birds in his art, and that was pretty special, too.
Right. He started putting backgrounds in, which a lot of people didn't do before, and most of them are fairly accurate. The only one I think I had an issue with, I'm not sure it's in the book, no, it's not in the book, but he's got one with a flamingo standing there by a tree. And, you know, flamingos, they're always in these really rotten salt flats with, you know, nothing, no living plants around.
Now, an artist who I really admire and who's a person who I think really, I contend that he wrote the first field guide, and that's Thomas Bewick, 1723 to 1828. He was a British guy who did his illustrations on wood engravings on boxwood ends. And you think, like, okay, it's a black and white wood engraving. You couldn't get that much detail of it. But when I look at Bewick's art, I can actually identify the birds from his wood engravings.
Yes.
They're beautiful.
Yes.
He wrote The History of British Birds. It's in two volumes. And I have one of the I have a copy of two of the books I own. And they're small enough that you could pack them in your saddle and go off into the country. So I think that could have been the first field guides.
Right, yeah, it was finally the right size.
Yeah, it was great. And it had a lot of information. He would have correspondents around Britain, and he would get information from them about the birds' behaviors. And when you look at this history of British birds by him, it really reads like a well-annotated field guide.
Right, yeah. Some of the earlier field guides, I think in some ways, are better than the field guides we have today. The field guides we have today are all about identification.
Not about the bird.
Yeah, not about what the birds do. A little bit of reference to that, but of course they will take a much thicker book. But it'd be nice if they added a little bit about how the birds behave so you can tell them apart that way.
Now, a person similar to him was Alexander Wilson, who was the first all-American ornithologist and probably wrote the first all-American ornithology book, American Ornithology.
Father of American Ornithology he was.
He was an interesting guy. He walked over most of America and he had correspondents that would contribute information, including Thomas Jefferson.
Right. Right. I think he, if I recall correctly, he delivered, you know, that what they used to do with books at the time is they would sell their books with by subscription.
Oh, yeah.
Called it. As they developed the book, they would deliver them and somebody would pay them. And he delivered one to the White House to Thomas Jefferson personally.
Anyway, he was like a great guy. You have to admire him. He's really friends with all these farmers across early America, and we just stop by and talk to them. His artwork, okay, I'll admit the artwork isn't the best. Like Thomas Buick's artwork is, I think, superior to his, but it was in color, and he tried hard. And I think he's really an amazing guy. Now, John James Audubon is a whole different story.
Right.
What do you want to say about Audubon?
Well, I think that the first interesting thing is that, you know, Audubon struggled. In fact, I didn't get the whole story. I couldn't find it anywhere, but he ended up in jail because he wasn't doing well in business. But he spent a year in jail before he finally discovered his artistic talent. And he was in, then he was in a, some store, well, the a store he owned with his, it was his brother, I think. And Alexander Wilson came by trying to sell his subscriptions to Audubon, and his brother whispers in his ear to Audubon and says, "Hey, James, your paintings are better than that. Don't buy them." So he didn't. But he apparently, and nobody's really proved this, apparently copied some of the paintings from Alexander Wilson.
I know it's like a big conspiracy theory, and I believe it. In this case, I really believe it. That he sort of ripped off the stances of the birds. Wanted to make these big dramatic, and for the elephant folio, I mean, it was like life-size birds.
Right.
But the one criticism that's come up recently is a lot of the stuff is really overly dramatic because he really wanted to sell the work, especially in Europe and in Britain. So his prints that you reproduce in your book is the mockingbirds attacking the rattlesnake, and that's typical Audubon, like incredibly over-the-top and dramatic.
Right. Yeah, that's a pretty classic picture of the rattlesnake one. I'm not sure that mockingbirds are going to do that. I guess
no.
Possible, but
you also, I think it would be tough to have a rattlesnake climb up a tree. Most rattlesnakes are pretty horizontal, as far as I've seen. So I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I mean, snakes are big predators on birds' eggs,
but not rattlesnakes.
Not rattlesnakes.
No. They're predating on mammals.
But maybe he saw one some other race.
Yeah, I think he
climbed up a tree and said, "Well, it'd be better if there was a rattlesnake up there."
Roger, I think he made it up.
You have to sell these books.
That's true, and he really put on the hard sell when he traveled around Europe, and he would do these dramatic lectures dressed in these like frontier garb, and really play up the fact that he was this frontier guy, and it was like, oh my god. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Roger J. Lederer, Professor Emeritus of Biological Sciences at California State University, Chico, where he taught courses on ornithology and ecology. But we're talking about his beautiful, I mean, gorgeous new book, The Art of the Bird, The History of Ornithological Art Through 40 Artists. One of the great things that you did in this book is you also included several female artists that a lot of people may not be familiar with. But I thought one of the interesting people was Elizabeth Gould, who worked with her husband John Gould.
Right.
Talk to me about that. That was an interesting story.
Well, they worked together on John Gould and Elizabeth Gould, but like a lot of women, you notice there weren't very many women noticed at all in the early art scheme, and I think there probably were a whole bunch of them. But Elizabeth Gould was the first one who really stood out. Her people respected what she did, and she did a lot of work with her husband. The problem is she didn't get any credit.
That's right.
And or got very little credit. And also, there were a couple other people who worked with Gould who didn't get any credit. And there was, I can't remember the statement, or you'll find it right now, but one of the workers of Gould said after he died, he wasn't such a, you know, in this old English way of saying it, he wasn't such a nice man.
But the books they put out
books were incredible. The British birds and then the Australian ones especially, I think they're mostly known for.
Oh, my God. But she also did a monograph of the Trogons.
The Trogons, yeah.
That is just gorgeous work that she did.
Yeah, it's some amazing words. They did it all, I guess, they did it with lithography. And I can't, again, I don't know enough about that technique. I have a general idea, but it seems to me really difficult.
Well, they would do the watercolor, and somebody else would translate it to the stone. They didn't actually, would not do the artwork to the stone. They would only do the original watercolor. And then somebody else, the lithographer, would transfer it to the actual stone that would then be...
Yeah, there were a number of them like that, and sometimes they complained because the lithographer didn't do exactly what
the
artist wanted them to do.
There's an artist that I bet people are unfamiliar with the fact that he did bird art, and that's Edward Lear. I think everybody knows Edward Lear for his nonsense poetry.
Right.
But in fact, he was a bird artist.
Yeah, he did some work for Gould as well.
That's right. That's exactly right. Now, there's a whole tradition of Swedish watercolorists and artists, and you mentioned two of them, Bruno L. was Ejiofors, and also later Lars Jonsson, who's an artist I really admire and I've had a chance to interview and talk with. When I look at those artists, they're very, very painterly. They're very different from the other. For instance, Bruno L. Ejiofors, he has a cat and a chaffinch painting that you reproduce in the book, where the cat's, you're looking sort of above, looking down, and the cat's chasing the chaffinch up. And man, that's a dramatic painting. That is really very painterly.
Yeah, I think of all the paintings that I looked at, I mean, I looked at a whole bunch of them, but that one was, I think, one of the most spectacular. And Joseph Wolff is just, I think, I don't know if he's the best in here, but boy, he had some really detailed, excellent pictures. Well, I can't imagine people doing stuff like that, how long it took him to do one painting.
Well, Lars Jonsson also, who works a lot with light, it's interesting. I originally got familiar with his artwork. I picked up a series of regional field guides from Europe that were all based on environment types, like birds of the mountains, birds of the moors. And they were illustrated with Lars Jonsson paintings. And I remember having been so used to typical field guide work, I remember going like, what use is this? This looks like I'm looking at paintings in a museum. What? And then I realized he was actually painting the way birds looked in the field as opposed to the idealized pictures you see in field guides.
Yeah, yeah, he had the colors really down too.
Yeah, but light's a huge effect with them too. It's amazing. Now, Arthur Singer, who illustrated the Birds of the West Indies by James Bond, a lot of people don't realize that's where James Bond's name came from.
Right.
And David Allan Silby is the person that you end it with. Where do you see bird art going right now? I mean, are people still trying to do bird art in the old way, like very, very dramatic bird art?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people doing bird art. I mean, I discovered, you know, someone like I was talking about before, Elizabeth Butterworth, who's done some incredibly detailed paintings. And I've run across a bunch of really interesting kind of bird art that's not in the book. But, I mean, Sibley is the one right now. He's also done stuff on trees. He's just a really good bird artist, and a lot of people do things like that. But also there's someone who makes bird art out of feathers. They cut the feathers.
What?
Out.
Wow.
They cut little silhouettes out of feathers, and maybe the whole feather is just little silhouettes cut out of it, and it's really tiny stuff. It's pretty amazing. It's very expensive, but I thought about buying some myself just because it's so incredible.
Do you remember the name of the artist?
No, I don't know.
Oh, man. So wait a minute, the art is like actually cut out of the feather?
Right, it's cut out of the feather, like, you know, little, tiny little scissors. So if you hold up the feather, you can see like a flock of birds flying through the feather, only they're just holes in the feather.
Oh, wow.
I can send you that it just dawned on me what that's one of the
pieces
of art. And then somebody who does woodcock paintings, he does paintings of woodcocks and I think other birds with woodcock feathers. It's what apparently that's what some people used to do. And so he take the woodcock feathers and dip them in ink and then draw a picture of a woodcock.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you know, so there's that, and there's a lot of people. I was a judge in a junior duck stamp contest one year,
I've actually done that too.
You have?
Yeah.
There was one of these. Well, you know what it is. There are about 300 or 400 students who.
That's
did
right.
It. I was amazed at the quality of some of these things. It was just truly incredible. And of course, the duck stamp that comes out every year is really high artwork. But any art show you go to, any place you go, I mean, now I'm paying a lot more attention to birds as I go through museums. There's lots of bird art, and mostly now I think it's realistic.
Yeah, and that's what I sort of liked about the Swedish artist is that it's realistic, but it's combined with sort of the light effects that you would see in sort of traditional, maybe early 20th century art. That there was a real painterly aspect to it that was really different. So you're not sort of these sort of just plain detailed, you know, sort of field guide looks are okay, and I'm glad they have them. I have them in my field guide, but I really like bird art that reflects the history of art in general. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think there's new techniques. I'm not sure. You know, there's acrylics and there is. I know. I have coffee with a bunch of old geezers like me on Tuesday morning, and one of them is an artist, and we've talked about this too. And there's so many different techniques that you're mixing up watercolors with acrylics, with oil paint, with everything else, that people are bringing out more and more details in a finer and finer way.
Well, this is a beautiful book, and congratulations on putting together my guest tonight.
Well, thank you. I give a lot of credit to the editors, too. They did a nice job with it.
You know, the reproductions are gorgeous. My guest tonight has been Roger J. Lederer, Professor Emeritus of Biological Sciences at California State University, Chico, where he taught courses on ornithology and ecology. We're talking about his new book, Beautiful, The Art of the Bird, The History of Ornithological Art Through 40 Artists. Roger, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.